Palisade Radio is preparing to release an in-depth report on the fundamentals of uranium, including our top three picks for 2019. Sign up today at palisaderadio.com to be the first to receive our exclusive report.
Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. This is your host, Colin Cattell. Excited to have a return guest back on the program for the third time this year, Jaime Carrascal. He's a portfolio manager at Canaccord Genuity. And Jaime's come on a couple times to discuss quite a few things, in fact, but one focus has been the yields and interest rates and how that's going to affect things like gold and the overall equity market and even cryptocurrencies. Jaime, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me back. I guess last time we spoke was sometimes in June, and yields were sitting around 280 on the 10-year treasury.
Yeah, well, the first time we spoke and before we recorded the first interview, you painted a pretty bleak picture for me, which is as soon as these yields bottomed and they started to move, you saw not a parabola forming, but something that would accelerate, and you'd start to see kind of a double every X amount of months. And that's a pretty scary picture for the implications it would have on a lot of things. We're now at about a 3.2% on the 10-year yield. So how does this play into your overall thesis and picture for the markets?
Well, it's funny you ask, because last week I think was the initial tremors in an earthquake that I see coming, in that yields crossed above 320. And if you look at what happened last week, which I think was a good signal of what's to come, you didn't have many safe havens left, because the bond market was getting hit, the stock market was getting hit, and the U.S. dollar was getting hit. There was actually only one safe haven, and that was the precious metals, which is what I expected to see. Now, the bigger issue is that interest rates are starting to bite. You know, we have yields now at 320. Powell seems to want to increase yields. To some extent, Trump is also accelerating those issues, because he's saying America first. So is he going to be willing to bail out Deutsche Bank, which I think is really the weak link within the financial sector? And the stock is still kind of holding water here around above nine euros, that is. I look at it in out of Germany. And I think it's signaling not a pretty picture going forward. And I'm actually preparing for not better markets, but to pick up better yields down the line. And that's how I've been adjusting portfolios.
Well, Jaime, let me ask you a question forefront in gold investors' minds, which is a lot of gold investors remember 2008. They thought gold was a safe haven. But the difference being, of course, that at the time, gold had rallied for 7 years alongside the stock market. And so when things tanked, gold got hit. Now, you know, of course, it recovered quicker, and it was a point of liquidity. But the action the last few days has been very, very interesting. I don't think people would have expected that gold would go up when the Dow went down 1,400 points.
Correct. Let's talk about gold for a second, because actually it's funny, because this was the first week that I've heard an institutional investor being interviewed and talking about the divergence that we're seeing between physical gold and the paper price of gold. Okay. A year ago, Terry Duffy made a warning. Terry Duffy is the chairman of the COMEX, and he was asked about gold. And out of nowhere, he said, you know, thank you very much for asking me about gold. And, you know, gold, if you look at what's going on around the world, a year ago, gold should be trading much higher than it is trading now. Now, I'm not going to tell you the price that he had said yet, but it's important to understand that all of the factors for which gold is necessary, be it a financial hedge for political risk, for economic risk, for interest rate risk, for all of the uncertainty we're seeing within the political dislocation, within the economic dislocation of the world, are bullish for gold, but gold has not yet moved, right? So I would argue that whatever the price should have been a year ago should be much higher today. Well, the price that he said, that the chairman of the COMEX said a year ago, was $5,000 to $6,000. That gold should be a year ago at $5,000 to $6,000 US, because of the factors of what was going on around the world, those are his words, a year ago. Now, I continue to argue that one of the problems is that The paper market has been suppressing the true price of gold, and it's being done with derivatives. And it's those very same derivatives that have been pushing markets up and down. So my view has consistently been, and I've been steadfast on this over the last 4 years, that people better understand that what we're living in is a complete facade that's being driven by printed money. So some markets have been pushed higher and some have been pushed lower. And when this game is over, you're going to have a rebalancing of everything that's being pushed higher and everything that's being pushed lower. Now, in that environment, I think where we're getting is to a point where if you look at history in terms of how the world has resolved these types of issues, has always been through some kind of a currency reset. I think people have to begin to understand that a proper reset is a likely scenario, especially when you look at the dislocation that's starting to occur between Asia and the U.S. and Europe, everywhere. We have complete dislocation. So how do you unwind this mess? I think the best way to do it would be exactly how Roosevelt do it. Somebody's going to have to take leadership and rebalance their currency to something that we can all trust. And the only thing we can all trust from a monetary perspective is gold. And that's why, if you look at anecdotally at what central banks are doing, they're all buying. Nobody's selling physical gold, even though the price is down. So I am extremely bullish for gold, and I continue to hold on to my positions and maintain them. Now, within that, I'm very happy to say that a lot of the producers that we own are doing very well because they're producing much lower than the cost of gold, where it's at right now, around $1,230. And same thing with silver. And so they're making money and they're able to produce, continue to acquire. You know, it's funny, not many juniors are acquiring right now, but one of my favorite juniors, America Silver, just bought Pershing Gold. And that's nice to see within the portfolio that maybe my clients are, you know, we're sitting waiting, but the companies we own are continuing to acquire. So I'm extremely bullish for precious metals, but it's financial insurance, and I've always seen it that way. And it's nice to see that last week, that financial insurance, that the premium starting to go up, that people are waking up. And that discussion starting to come to the forefront.
Jaime, looking at the 10-year yield, it's up about 100% off its bottom, give or take. And you've stated before that you think it's going to continue moving up. What kind of implications does it have? And are there any thresholds in your mind where we hit a certain point and it really starts to have an impact, or are we there now?
Well, I think I would quote Jeff Kunlash and his presentation about a quarter ago. He said we get above 320 to 350 and we're going to see tremors. Oddly enough, last week we crossed that. We got up to 325 and look at what happened. It's important to understand that the real market is the bond market because it's so much bigger. Now, with the 10-year yield at 320, it has massive implications for the U.S. economy. One is the fact that we're already starting to see interest rate expenses going up for the government. That's have gone up, I believe it was, the number just doesn't come to me right now, but it was a massive increase throughout this year. The other problem is mortgages. Mortgages are going up because the 10-year bond sets mortgage rates for the U.S., so we're starting to see that slow down. On another side of the, it doesn't justify the current dividend rate for the Dow. So it'll also put pressure on the Dow as interest rates increase. The other problem as well is look at the geopolitics. Look at what's happening with Saudi Arabia, with the Chinese. Well, they're selling treasuries. Japan is selling treasuries. And the buyer so far has been the U.S. government. So it's funny, if you look at the ownership of U.S. treasuries, 5 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, it was mostly foreigners. Now it's starting to switch over to Americans, where Americans' pension funds are owning that debt, and that's really setting it up for much bigger inflation as rates start to increase. Again, I'm a credit guy. I used to be a repo trader for Gordon Capital, so I look very closely at the interest rate cycle. And one of the things that everybody has been saying is that the yield curve was going to flatten. Well, it hasn't flattened. It's starting to steepen. It continues to steepen as I thought it would. And so my vision of how things are going to play out is that they're going to eventually lose control of the yield. And to me, that is what seems to be happening. Now, having said that, also let's take a look at the next 3 weeks are going to be very important because of the U.S. election that's coming up. most people talking about the U.S. election, they expect the Democrats to win. I would start to price in that maybe the Republicans win the House, and that would be very important for the Make America Great Again mantra of Trump, because it also means that will he want to help out the rest of the world if the Republicans win? I would be betting that the Republicans are going to win the election, and then Trump is going to control not only the House and the Senate, but also the judiciary now with the Kavanaugh appointment within the Supreme Court. Now, that will have very big implications, because how bullish will it be for the U.S. dollar if all of a sudden we have a U.S. president that does not want to continue to play within the global spectrum of the world as we've set it up over the last 30, 40 years, and he's saying, no, we're going to go on our own and we're going to worry about the U.S. first. Again, that'll be very negative for interest rates, and it's going to force interest rates higher. So I continue to prepare for greater and greater volatility, and to me, I find it, I think that investors right now are all focusing on the fact that the Dow continues to stay higher and not look at the reality around them. I tend to think more of the analogy of frogs. You know, if you put a frog and you put the water to boil, they don't notice that the water is being boiled. If you throw them in when the water has already boiled, well, then they notice it, right? And I think that's what's happening, that investors, in my opinion, are kind of being overly greedy instead of taking a look at everything that's going on around them, on how this bull market seems to be more like a topping market and it seems to be turning. I would caution people to at least look at the banking index and see what's happening within the banking index that it has been leading down for a while now.
The Fed has indicated that they're going to maintain their move towards higher rates. And with the 10-year yield moving up, how do you think that plays into Fed policy? Are they going to continue on this path, or will there be a sudden and quick roundabout change?
I like what Daniela DiMartino Booth, who used to be Fred Fisher's Texas, he was the man that was supposed to replace Yellen, and then he quit. Well, she's been out there saying that Powell's going to continue raising rates and he's going to stick to his plan. Now, it's funny because we hear President Trump saying, "Oh, the Fed, you know, they're not doing good things." But is that noise, or are they really doing what they wanted? What they should be doing, which is kind of killing this debt bubble that they've created? So I think I look at Fed policy, and I think it's in line with what Trump wants to do, which is to unwind this debt event, and so I do think that Powell will continue raising rates as we go forward. At some point, there might be a panic button, but you know it's not going to happen unless the market goes down at least more than 7%, 5 to 7%, and we're not there yet, right? So I think Fed policy will continue raising rates and will continue creating more and more volatility within the equity markets. Having said that, you also have to understand that it creates a benefit, right, within fixed income portfolios to stay short right now to try to catch higher yields going forward. The question is, you know, do yields start to run up and they lose control of the yield cycle? One of the things that nobody talks about is what happens to the credit derivative swaps, right? Because they have a reset button as interest rates start to go up, and it's those resets that start to get hit. So that'll create by default more and more volatility as they continue to do this. So, you know, I just think that going forward, we have to prepare for not better markets, but more of a financial storm.
Now, in regards to Trump, on the one hand, you've got a president who is, in theory, a very good business person, must look at the debt situation and say, this is out of control. If this was my company, I would want to raise rates. But on the other hand, he wants to win the election every 2 years, including his presidential election in another 2 years. So how does somebody like Trump actually decide what's best for himself or for the country?
Well, I see Trump as the king of bankruptcy. So I think he's a perfect man to be running the U.S. right now, because I think the U.S. financially, if you really look at all of the debts, and, you know, and I'm not talking about the 22 trillion now in liabilities. I'm also looking at the unfunded liabilities of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security and everything else. The only way forward is to really bankrupt. So I think Trump is the man for the job. As for the coming election, I think he's done exactly what he should do. He's talked up the market. He's talked up on the all the positives, and the election's almost here. So after November, what kind of message is he gonna be signaling going forward? We'll see. But I think he's done everything to make sure that the Republicans win as much power as possible in this coming election. After that, I think he would have consolidated the power to himself. So we'll see what happens. It's funny because Scotiabank, my ex-employer, banned me from doing BNN, the television, when I called Trump in April of 2016 before the election. I saw Trump coming because I saw the populist wave. What's interesting now is everybody's expecting the Democrats to win, and I think what's going to happen is that we're going to end up with a massive consolidation of power for Trump. In that environment, I think he will have the control to be able to move forward as he wishes. One of the things, though, is that you have to understand that the populist message is always about finding a common foe. And that message is starting to change, that China is now the common foe. We've changed from the Middle East, from Syria, from Russia, and now China is definitely being presented as the foe that has been, you know, not being good to the U.S. Well, that, to me, is just political rhetoric. What it really signals is that they're signaling that the whole globalist system that we have set up needs to be unwound. So to me, it's a clear message between what Trump is saying and where do we go forward. Again, in that environment, I think we're going to have way more chaos, economic chaos going forward, and that won't be supportive for the markets. So I would rather, I think on the overall, I would advise investors to be more cautious, raise cash, prepare, and definitely have at least 20% of their investable assets in precious metals as financial insurance.
Let's assume that the yields continue to rise, and assume that they continue to rise at somewhat of a gradual rate as they have been, or a similar rate. That necessarily means, as the yield goes up, that it attracts capital away from the equity market, and that equities should start to really decline. Is that correct?
That is correct. But the problem is that by the same token, we're seeing a massive loss of value within the bond markets, which are the bigger component, right? So if you look at pension funds are already underfunded. The bulk of their assets are in interest-bearing investments that are going to devalue even more. So then you see a devaluation of their equity component. So it creates an even bigger problem. And this is the number one problem with that debt-driven facade that we have. That as the interest rates rise, as they lose control of their belief that they can control the value of money, the value of everything that has been appreciated because of that facade tends to devalue. And so what we end up with is massive stagflation and inflation. And I think that is the problem, that the social cost of that to pension funds is going to be extremely high, and people better start preparing for that, right? The other thing is it's clear now that this QE facade that it was going to trickle down to everybody, it hasn't. You know, we haven't had any level of trickle economics. It's just passed on to the 1-5% of the population, and then it settled there, right? Now we're starting to see a little bit more of a rise in stock values, but again, that's been done through mostly buybacks. What's interesting is that I love watching or reading the insider selling reports. Insiders are selling, and they have been selling for about 2 quarters now. Meanwhile, the markets continue to go higher, and it's the retail investors that are jumping on board. It reminds me very much of the high-tech cycle here in Canada. It's the Nortel part of, you know, in 1999, when everybody wanted to buy Nortel. Well, that was a time to be selling. And that's the one thing that I like about the precious metals right now. You have a lot of companies in that sector that you're buying earnings very cheap, and nobody recognizes this for the value that it is.
Okay, so really bring this down to my level of understanding. Take today versus 2008, because that's the most recent kind of crash or change in terms of the overall market. What is similar and what is different about what's going on right now?
The one thing that's similar today about 2008 is to understand that after 2008, we fixed a debt problem with more debt. So today it's 2008, but levered to an unbelievable level. Just to put it into context, between 2015 and today, equity markets, real estate markets, and derivative markets around the world have appreciated by $100 trillion, never mind what they've appreciated since 08. So that debt bubble is just bigger than it was in 08. So in my opinion, have they done enough to try to save the banking sector? We won't know until this thing blows up. I can assure you that if Deutsche Bank goes under, it's Lehman Brothers levered to the nth degree, because it's $79 trillion worth of derivatives, right? So can we save that one? So to me, if you want to do a parallel between now and 2008, we just face a much bigger problem because the level of debts are way bigger. So I would be running away from this market much faster than I was in 08. And in 08, I saw it coming. I think what's coming now is the one that we won't be able to fix. And that's why I continue to argue that one of the ways that we can resolve this is through a proper monetary reset. And a monetary reset, everybody has to be on board. That's the question. If Hillary Clinton was on side, maybe we could reach that agreement. With Trump in place, it's a separate animal, because I think he is about putting America first, and he's going to continue to move forward with his policy, right? And so because of that, I think if we want to run parallels, I would be even more cautious today than I was this time in 2008, and I would be preparing for even worse markets going forward. Now, again, to me, that's a great opportunity, because in the big portfolio that I manage, where I have quite a bit of dividend payers, well, we're sitting in almost 30-40% cash, and we've slowly been adding to a lot of the dividend to the blue chip companies like the TransCanadas, the TransAltas here in Canada, where the yields are getting up there. Like right now, AltaGas, I managed to pick up some AltaGas with a 10% dividend yield, right? And so I'm seeing a replay of 08, in that as 08 started to play out, you know, at the beginning of the year, I believe Enbridge was trading at about a 3% dividend, and then by the end of 09, we could pick some Enbridge up with an 8% dividend. You see, that those to me are very beneficial, but you got to be in cash, and you got to be ready to be adding as yields go down. The big difference is, I really don't know if, unlike 08, will they be able to save this market once it starts to roll over? Because if they lose control of the interest rate cycle, and if the world is not going to work in conjunction to fix it all up, you know, well, look at Europe, for example, right? The Italians are saying, well, forget this, we're going back to Rome, and you were telling me you were visiting in Italy. But again, in Spain, you're starting to see quite a bit of issues. You have it in England with Brexit. So what I see is greater and greater dislocation. So how are we going to all play together to put it all together? Well, I don't know. I think Humpty Dumpty is going to be a hard problem to put together this time around.
Final question for you, and I'm not going to hold you to these as predictions, but more so to give people an idea of where your head is at looking over the next 12 months. Where do you think that yields could go to? What do you think that gold could do? What do you think the market might do over the next, say, 12 to 18 months?
For gold, first of all, I have always said to clients, and I've positioned it very, my mantra has been that I don't know when the price rebounds, but the longer it takes to rebound, the higher it's going to go, because the bigger the mess that was created. Okay, so as far as gold, when it goes, I've always been aiming to getting back up to $1,900 to $2,000. I think it's going much higher than that, but anything on top of 2,000 will be gravy for me. I think the leverage in the producers is great, and they're going to do extremely well. For the markets themselves, you know, it's hard to tell, because if we end up with a proper inflationary wave spike, you know, the markets could go to 50,000, but that's again in the contents of a declining dollar and a rising interest rate environment, right? So that's highly inflationary. So that would be a very hard peg. I think what's more important is to be preparing for higher interest rates. What does that mean for the average person? First of all, if you have floating mortgages, make sure you start locking in longer-term mortgages. I just locked in a 5-year mortgage on my property, and some of my rental are out to a 10-year mortgage, which you can't even get anymore. Now, no bank's going to go longer than 7. Right, so extend, make sure that you extend and you get out of variable. As for the markets, make sure that you lock in some of these profits, start moving some money to cash. That would be very beneficial. And again, make sure that you have some precious metals for financial insurance within your portfolio. The other thing is have some money set aside and kept at home just in case at some point the financial system is shut down, right, if we have a proper monetary reset. And what am I talking about? Nixon in August of 1973, when he unpegs from gold, Roosevelt in 1933, the Bretton Woods Agreement, right, where they reset, the Paris Agreement as well in the 70s, right? So it's periods of time when the world comes together under the IMF and they said, okay, we're gonna clean this up, and when the markets open up again, it's going to be a completely new environment, right? And for that, you got to make sure that you have some money set aside at home so that you can continue functioning, because you won't be able to ask. You know, they'll set up an AT, an exit from your bank of about $100, maybe to $500 a day, right? So you got to be able to have some money set aside, but prepare for a storm. You know, as a good sailing analogy, being a sailor is, you know, you don't put your sails down when the storm hits. You start preparing prior to that, and you batten down your hatches and you prepare for it. And that's what I've been doing.
Well, Jaime, always a wealth of knowledge. Thank you for spending some time with us on your Friday afternoon and coming back on the show. So we will endeavor to get you back on the program here in the next few months, and of course get an update on what's going on in the bond market and the equity market and gold.
Thank you. Thank you for the call. And by the way, just to put a plug on for Canaccord, we have an excellent gold team, and they've actually come out and said that in their opinion, the fundamentals, the technicals, everything is bullish for the sector, and at some point it's got to go. So, you know, we do follow quite a number of companies, and they've done an excellent job. It's really good to be at a company that is also following the sector that I like, and I think it's going to have a lot of benefit. And then on top of that, we're in Canada. We're at least, you know, now we have cannabis is legal, and that's another sector that looks very interesting.
Yeah, well, it's great to work at a group that's looking at contrarian points in the market, probably something that can exist in Canada. Very few groups in the U.S. that would possibly be looking at gold right now.
Oh, I agree. And it's funny, because not being at an independent again, having worked at Burns Fry and a number of Gordon Capital, all the independents that came out of Canada, it's so good to be working at a company that is not bank oriented, but independent thinking. And I think that's what we're going to need going forward. Another thing about Canaccord that I particularly like is they have big assets in England and Australia. So a lot of of our cash flow doesn't just come from Canada. So it is a global company. And that makes me, I want to be working in a firm that, you know, I know that the ship's going to make it through the storm. Thanks for having me, and happy to chat at any time.
Perfect. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Jaime.
Think you understand the junior mining sector, and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw materials. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on?